Welcome back to Straight Talk, the best hour in Fresno radio.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. And Warren Zevon must have been in a very tough situation if he needed lawyers. Okay, sometimes we all need a lawyer, but he needed guns and money. And I think the song refers to a situation in a third world country. Here in America, we're going through some tough times ourselves, and we're having an examination of our legal system and our correction systems. I'm talking with David Mugridge, and he is a criminal defense attorney here in Fresno. And David, this area is kind of a pioneer in gang injunctions. We have a gang injunction in Sanger against a branch of the Bulldogs in the Roding Park area. The Parkside Bulldogs were one of the first in the country to have a gang injunction against them. And now we see other areas in California using this tool as well. In the past, you have said that these gang injunctions can be unfair. Give us your thoughts about them.
I had one of the first cases that I can recall in Fresno County was with the Selma Rifa Bulldog Gang. And the actually, we challenged it in Superior Court, and we were able to get some of the restrictions eliminated from the ordinance on the grounds that they were simply unconstitutional. The essence of my position on gang injunctions is there's no question that we've got problems with gangs, and there's no question that we've got to do something about that. And ordinances like the ones that we have around in the Fresno County area, I can live with if the gang members are also given the opportunity to have legal counsel. My problem with simply throwing out a new or enacting, if you will, a new gang ordinance to control them is that they should be, as citizens of the United States, they should be entitled to have an attorney present to argue the merits of what's being presented, just as if it was an injunction for a temporary restraining order in a civil dispute. I think they should be entitled to do that. And there may be cases when they are, but my experience so far has been that what happens is the district attorneys or county council goes to a court and they say, okay, we've got a problem with this gang in this particular area, and they convince the judge without opposition, they convince the judge to sign off on a gang ordinance.
You're saying is let's slow down the process, make sure they are represented.
As a constitutional lawyer, that's exactly what I think. I think that the potential for abuse by the government is enhanced when you don't have the ability to have somebody on the other side say, wait a minute, I think you need to consider this or you need to consider that, any more than we would in a lawsuit. If I was going to sue somebody because they had damaged my car in an auto accident, I think everybody could understand that, well, you know, it's not fair if I simply go into the court, I show the judge my medical bills, I show him a copy of all the damages of my car, and the judge says, fine, I'm going to award you $2,000 in damages. And then I give it to the person who caused damage to me, and that person says, well, wait a minute, I wasn't even able to be in court. I didn't even know about it. I don't think a gang injunction should be any different than that.
And what about people that live in the community or the area and they're not members of the gang? I'm sure that some people would advocate for the injunction, but other people may have concerns that somehow they are caught up in this as well and that their freedoms are abridged.
And it does happen, and that's one of the problems. When you overgeneralize and you have no opposition, and the court's not out there. I mean, the judge isn't living in that little Selma pocket where they have all those gang problems. And I'm not necessarily saying I don't think we should have them. On the contrary, I mean, I'm a resident of Fresno County, and, you know, if there were problems with gangs in my area, I'd be the first one that was out there that would be pushing for it. But I think, again, it's like all the rest of criminal law. You have to have a balanced approach. You have to have the right to present your point of view before a court makes a decision. That's all.
Let me ask you about this, and this was about 10 years ago or so, but you cooperated in an investigation that led to the censure and the retirement of Judge James Aaron. The judge had been hitting you up for basically you and other attorneys to participate in an investment thing that he was running, and turned out to be more of a scheme than an actual investment. Was it hard for you to participate in this investigation?
It was very difficult for me to get it, to be involved in the investigation at all, and actually it wouldn't have even come from my standpoint to an investigation until actually I was subpoenaed by the U.S. Attorney's Office to testify in federal court against other members of this organization, and in the process of my testimony, the topic of the judge came up. And Judge Wenger, district court judge there now, I believe, was the one that referred this to the state bar for investigation. And I simply responded to subpoenas that they served me with.
David, the death penalty. I got to admit, early in my life, I was against the death penalty. Covering courts, as I did for a time in my journalism career, coming in contact with people that I just know redeeming social value to them. I mean, they're sociopaths, seeing the destruction and all the just heartache that they caused. My beliefs changed and came to the point where basically I'm saying, you know, if you're willing to take someone's life, you should know, or you should be willing to give your own life up. And that's how I've squared my thoughts in regards to the death penalty, so I'm an advocate of it. I don't know that I'm an advocate of how California handles it, where justice is delayed forever for these families, maybe 25, 30 years before someone is put to death. You may have other thoughts on that. And you identify yourself as someone who believes in the political philosophy of Ronald Reagan and on the someone who's very conservative, yet you are against the death penalty. And you have said the fact that I am against the death penalty, I can't be a judge here in California because I may be called to impose it.
I know there's – I read recently about another, I think, Fresno County Superior Court judge who was also against the death penalty, and he described how it was the most difficult decision in his life. After the jury returned their verdict on it, to impose that, and he was able to justify that in his own mind. I simply couldn't do that. Yes, I am against the death penalty for moral reasons. I am against the death penalty for financial reasons. Morally, I had to face it for the first time when I considered my own parents' death, and I know the feelings that I had when they were killed, and I was probably closer to the death penalty in favor but then than I am now. But even then, I did not believe that it would have been the right thing to do to impose the death penalty. But aside from that, in today's environment where we have all these problems, financial problems, there's no dispute by any knowledgeable source that the death penalty costs us vastly more money to impose on somebody than simply giving somebody life without possibility of parole. And I think for that reason alone, even if you're not morally opposed to it, from a financial standpoint, I think it makes no sense to spend all this money and wait, as you said, 20, 30 years to try to impose it on somebody. I worked for a while or did some work up in county up in Eureka. I'm trying to remember the name, if that's Del Norte or whatever that county is up there. And I was interested to find out that the judges, the defense attorneys, and the district attorney in that county had decided that as a practical matter that it would make no sense for them to spend their precious dollars on the death penalty. And they, as a rule, if you will, for that particular county, decided not to ever seek the death penalty. And I can't.
Now, can that legally stand up, seeing that the death penalty is legal in California?
Well, if you don't impose it, I mean, if you don't go out and seek it, it's up to the district attorney in the first place. If they don't want to ask for the death penalty, then, you know, it's not going to be imposed. And I don't have any reason to believe that the murder stats up in that county are higher than they are in other places in California. So, you know, I think from a practical financial standpoint, And I don't remember what the most recent figures are, but it's like several million compared to less than $100,000 per year to incarcerate somebody for the rest of their life, including the problems that we have with the aged population in prisons. So why would I want to spend that kind of money and take that kind of time, 20, 30 years, as you say, to eventually execute an old man, which is about what it happens at that point. More of these guys are dying in prison of old age than they are because we've injected drugs into them.
Well, you're right about that. I want to talk to you about a case. Now, this didn't involve a murder trial, but it was a case of a local high school student who was accused of, I think, attacking his teacher, and he was charged with the crime, and the student had Asperger's, which is a form of autism, and I don't know how you got the case, how it was referred to you, because generally, like I say, you're handling murder cases and that kind of thing, but the student was acquitted, and at the time, at the verdict, you were more emotional than anybody's ever seen you in a trial.
It was a tough case, no question about it. In addition to being a criminal defense attorney, I am also a criminal teacher. I've taught criminal law at Fresno Pacific University, at Fresno City College, and still presently over at San Joaquin College of Law, where I teach advanced legal research and writing. So as a teacher, it was kind of tugging on my heart, because here's a young man. My recollection was he was about 15 years old, just a skinny little thing. I think if the wind came up, you'd have blown him over easily. And they had a plan involved of how they were going to take care of the child in the school, and somehow the plan wasn't followed, and the child reacted to that. And, you know, one thing led to another, and the substitute teacher that was involved said, you know what, I think this case should be prosecuted as an assault. I had never heard of the term Asperger's disease at all until this case came about. And we did kind of a gutsy thing at the time when we talked to the parents. I said, I don't think this kid has the capacity to even understand what's going on. So we alleged a lack of capacity. And after I had done that, then all parties actually got together. And through the assistance of the district attorney, the public defender's office also got involved in it. The county council got involved in it. The presiding judge of juvenile court got involved. Everybody decided that the best thing that we should do in this particular case is not just withdraw the case, but let's actually see if we can do something for this young man and see if we can get him some help. It was what I'm saying all along in this case. It was a marvelous example of how we can come together as a group of government entities and private individuals and make a determination on a case and do what is actually the right thing to do. And that's actually what happened in the case. And I was so thrilled to see someone like Judge, I can't think of who it was now. Somebody that had suggested.
I'll find it.
Somebody who had suggested that we should get some counseling for this young man. I can't remember who it was now. And the present probation officer, Linda Penner, was involved in it and came up with some absolutely fabulous.
It was Judge Dale Akita.
Yeah, actually, Dale Akita recused himself because of a previous matter that we've discussed Judge Aaron. That was something else. It wasn't Judge Akita. But it was a perfect example of how we can resolve these cases if we get a whole bunch of people together all looking towards the same objective. What is the best thing to do? And they ended up withdrawing the prosecution against him, and I'll never forget when we walked out in front, here's this little boy, and he came up to me and just grabbed me and gave me a hug. That's probably one of the most emotional, well, I shouldn't say probably, that was the most emotional moment that I've ever had in my entire career as an attorney, when a client, a 14, 15-year-old shrimpy little kid came up to me and gave me a hug. I lost it at that point.
Very good, and I think we're going to have to dispense with our water cooler segment today because we're running out of time, and I have gone past the queue there, and Garrett's nodding yes at me, so we're going to take a break, and we'll come back and wrap up with attorney David Mugridge right after this on the Big 13.